Showing up. Shawty. What do you do? Pimpin'.
Oh boy.
And we are back here. You're listening to Hot in the Igloo, where we talk everything DU sports and more. I'm Paul Gunnis. Alongside me, Forrest Hunt, Ethan Estrada, Ken Goldstone. Guys, let's talk a little volleyball.
Yeah, let's. And I'd like to go back to this last weekend. We had a couple of volleyball matches. Of course, we have one coming up tonight. And, well, we're playing the Hawaii teams this week. We played, took on Hawaii Pacific in the Collins Center last week. And the Penguins lost that one, a score of 3-1. And in that game, we really saw a terrific showing, Ethan, from Cameron Cauley. Cameron Cauley was a 5'8" outside hitter for the HPU Sharks. And we saw her take over the first set when HPU won 25-14. The scores for the three sets after that all came 25-22. And she set, well, she didn't set a record, but she had as many kills in the Collins Center this year as we've seen all year when she had 21 in that match against DU.
She definitely was the name that came out of our mouths most frequently, and for good reason. 21 kills in four sets is insane to think about. And also on that side of things, to look at how the Penguins did after the first. It seems like they always struggle in that first set, and after that they seem to wake up and be a lot more competitive afterwards. But when you have an outside hitter like Cameron Cauley as a weapon on your side, it's really hard to defend against that.
Well, it also helps when the Penguins' defense was just horrific in that game. I mean, the blocks just weren't there. And if they were there, somehow Hawaii Pacific just avoided them. And I think that we saw good adjustment, but the Penguins definitely struggled in that first game with their defense.
Yeah, Brittany Chan and Catherine Johnson, we knew, were coming off a really good week at home, a week where each of them had 19 kills in one match. And in that game against Hawaii Pacific, Brittany Chan led the team with 12 kills, Kate Even then with 11, the only two in double digits. And then we'll move on to the next game they played. They took on, you guys, a really, really good Chaminade team. And Paul, you reiterated it multiple times in your pregame. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we talked about it going in. If the Penguins were going to beat Chaminade, they had to play perfect. And to be quite honest with you, in my opinion, in that game against Chaminade, which the Penguins lost 3-1, that's the best we've seen them play all season in the Collins Center. In my opinion, on defense, you talked about it. The one thing they had to fix from the HPU to Chaminade were the blocks. They did that. They played really well. They played pretty sound. And that Chaminade team, even when they were bad, they looked really good.
Well, I mean, let's just list some stats here, shall we, Forrest?
Go for it.
Emma Tecklenburg had 23 kills that night. Bell Brook had 16. Handy Alana had 10. The Penguin leaders, Catherine Johnson with 9, Kat Thomason with 9, Brittany Chan with 9. Nobody broke double digits for the Penguins. Yeah. And like you and I both know, the Penguins played really well, and nobody broke double digits in kills. That Chaminade team, the only time the Penguins ever came close against them, we were talking about we need a miracle. Then we won one set. Mm-hmm. And then the next set, we should have won. That second set, we should have won.
Yes.
My streak continued.
Right.
My losing streak continued. Then we go to the third set. Ethan calls it. We win. Fourth set, we should have won. I mean, we went to the 24th point. We were in the break point.
Yeah.
And I don't know how we don't win that set. I was going bananas
no,
on
you
air.
Were. You were.
I was going completely bananas on air. And the only reason we had a chance to upset that Chaminade team was because they were making self-inflicted errors. I mean, we saw service errors. We saw sets just completely mistimed, which out of a caliber of team like Chaminade, if they got those little mistakes together, they'd be the top team in the conference. Yeah. They'd go undefeated. I mean, they are the best team I've seen in the Collins Center all year. And we took on, I think we already took on the top team in the conference, didn't we? What was that, a couple weeks ago? One second, I have it right here. We took on, was it
Azusa Pacific?
Azusa Pacific.
Okay.
It was Point Loma or Azusa Pacific. But those two teams were like top of the conference teams. I believe it was APU was a top team. I was there for that game. You were there for that game against APU. This team looked better than APU, this Chaminade team. I mean, Brooke Bell and Emma Tecklenburg,
yeah,
two of the best players in the conference.
Well, and then we saw Brooke Bell up front. I mean, how many blocks did she have? I mean, we have it right here. Brooke Bell was so good in the middle at 6'2". Brooke Bell had 6 blocks in that game. That's twice as many as anybody on her team and twice as many as anybody on the Penguins. Kat Thomas had 3. Brooke Bell had 6 blocks to go with her. What did she have, 16 kills? So that's 22 total points for Brooke Bell. That's insane. And you talked about Emma Tecklenburg. She was good as well. And then you also had Cernusek in the middle. That was 6'1" for Chaminade. She would come in, and she was a force defensively. And it just seemed like, oh, we got Brooke Bell out of the game. Here we go. We can get some offense going. And it just wasn't the case.
Well, you know, another thing too, Forrest. I think if you took the third or fourth girl off that bench at Chaminade, they're a star player for the Penguins.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm not doing that to discredit the Penguins at all. It's just talking about how good of a team this Chaminade team really was. And that's why, if you guys heard me on the air, I was freaking out. Because I realized, you know, we all did watching this game, how big it would be if the Penguins could have won that fourth set. Because between the three of us, I mean, and everybody listening, I think if they win that fourth set, we go on to upset them and the Conlon Center. I just think the momentum was heading our way, even though we lost that last set. And then after the game, I hear the Chaminade coach, we all did, we see the Chaminade coach just ripping into her team. You guys need to be better. You should have waxed this team. You should have stepped on the gas. You were up 2-0, you let them back in it. And it was the truth. I mean, really thought the Penguins were going to reverse sweep. You know, the second time we would have seen a reverse sweep in a week. And I just think that, you know, as a Penguins fan, there's a lot of positive side. If we can hang with a team like that, we can hang with anybody. You know, moving into the game today, another tough opponent, I just think we can hang with anybody in the conference because Chaminade is a top tier in the conference.
Oh, we talked about it after they lost that second set. They lost the first set 25-12. They barely got into double digits. And then you go into the second set and lose 25-22. Something changed. And we talked about it was the service errors, especially in the third set. When the Penguins won that set 25-22, there were 6 service errors on behalf of Chaminade. Those are the errors you're talking about. And then, of course, you have to win by 2. In set number 4, Chaminade had to go to 26. They won that one 26-24. And that's a testament to your point, Paul, that if you win that fourth set, all the momentum, good team, bad team, whoever you're playing, it's a game of momentum at that point when you're playing to 15 in set 5.
Well, also, Forrest, another thing that the Penguins did that was unbelievable in my perspective was the Penguins were down 20-15 in that third set.
Yeah.
I gave up on them. I mean, I said it on the air.
You did.
I gave up on them. And they came back and out of nowhere. I mean, like, it was unbelievable. They had like 4 or 5 straight points. What was it? I think it was Kate Even was on the service line.
Yeah, it was Kate
Even. Yeah, she just goes on this impeccable run. And all of a sudden, the Penguins look like they're going to upset this team. And I'm yelling at the listeners, like, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
And it was just exciting. It was an exciting experience. It was a really good loss, if there's such a thing.
You talked about another tough opponent coming into tonight, Paul, and you were just looking at it. You're taking on Hawaii Hilo, a team that is very good, and another team.
Yeah.
It's going to be a tough one tonight. You know, you said it. We were just talking off air. We go, we're playing Hilo tonight, right? And you're going, that's a similar team to Chaminade. I mean, what are the Penguins going to have to do? I mean, you played an HPU team that you beat over in Hawaii, and then you come here and you lose 3-1. You play Chaminade that you and I and Ethan will probably all argue one of the best teams in the conference, if not the best, if they didn't have to play each other. And now you're taking on Hawaii Hilo.
Well, here's the good news for the Penguins. I want to just read you a couple stats. The Penguins did get waxed by this team in Hawaii.
Yeah.
But this Chaminade team that we almost beat waxed Hawaii Hilo. So I think that that's a positive thing because we showed ourselves that we could hang with Chaminade. That means we could hang with anybody. And I think that if we just take that mindset, if Coach Nolan is in that locker room right now because the game's coming up in an hour and a half.
They're there right now.
Yeah, they're there right now. I watched him walking into the Conlon Center earlier. I went to go see Coach Nelson and saw him walking in. If, you know, Coach Nolan's telling them in the locker room right now, hey, girls, we hung with Chaminade. And this team is not as good as Chaminade.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's go out there. Let's play our game. Let's, you know, keep our blocks tight like we saw against Chaminade. Let's play our A game, and we can hang with this team. We can beat them.
Well, here's the other thing that I'm looking at, Paul. They played Hilo on September 7th. They've had a lot of time to tweak things since then. And when you look at the stats in that game, Katherine Johnson led with 7 kills. She led with 1 block. I don't think that's the Penguin team we're going to see tonight. You're not going to see a team, a DU team, come out that's going to have the leading killer in single digits and their top blocker, Katherine Johnson, with 1 block. It's not going to happen. They're not playing that way right now. And as you said, if they can replicate what they did against Chaminade, you might see them beat this Hilo team that swept them in Hawaii.
Yeah, the two things I want to mention about what you just said. If the leading leader for the kills for the Penguins is in single digits, it'll be because 4 girls will have like 9 kills. It won't be because, you know, Katherine Johnson has 9 and nobody else is even close. That's the only way that the leader is in single digits. But the second thing I wanted to mention, and the more crucial thing in my opinion, is we might see Brittany Lateague play tonight. I'm not 100%. Yeah. I have to talk to Coach Nolan before the game. But we might see Brittany Lateague return tonight. She was practicing all week. She was warming up over the weekend in those games. I think we might see Lateague make her return tonight. And if Lateague comes back, I'm calling an upset.
Yeah, Lateague, especially up front, is a huge defensive upgrade. And going back to that Chaminade game, a reason why I think it's important that they hung in there and show that they can is because the team's so young. Only 3 seniors, and now you're going to be able to come back next year with that experience of taking this team down to the wire. You almost had the upset in your grasp. Now you know what you have to do to beat them, and that's going to be important facing the big powerhouses next year.
I just think that this Penguins team, you know, keep watching if you're just a fan, if you don't have invested interest, like your daughter's a senior or something like that. Keep watching this Penguins team. I think you're going to see Penguins volleyball rise to the top of the conference the next couple of years because we have a lot of young talent. Coach Nolan has been proven to bring in this young talent. I think that you're going to see a dramatic improvement for this Penguins team.
The other thing, you mentioned Coach Nolan. This is her 3rd season. So that means she inherited Brittany Lateague. She inherited Kate even. She inherited Kat Thomason from the coaches prior to her. So when you think about this core group, the 6 freshmen and 6 sophomores or whatever it is, that's all credit to Coach Yami Nolan. And you think about how good this young core is that she brought in last year with the freshmen, how good the freshmen are and how much they're contributing this year, like you said, Ethan, and like you said, Paul, this team under Yami Nolan is just going to get better and better. I mean, you think about that core of players that she's brought in. What other 5 or 6 freshmen are she going to bring in? Think about it. You have 6 juniors next year, 6 sophomores next year, and then you bring in 5 freshmen maybe. That may be 4 freshmen, but that core 11 has been playing together for 2 or 3 years. That's deadly.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, the key is keeping them here, keeping them happy. And I think that if she can do that, which I think she will, you know, she's kept her seniors happy. So I think if we get those returners to come back in the next couple of years, we're going to hang with anybody in this conference. I mean, we could be a top 2-3 team. And we saw the potential in the Penguins, Yami Nolan's first year. When she has the talent, she knows how to coach a championship team. That Penguins team, our freshman year.
Yeah, they were good.
2016, they were pretty solid. I mean, they fell off towards the end of the year a little bit, but there was a time where they were like 1st or 2nd in the conference for majority of the year. I think they ended up like 4th that year. The bottom line is, if we get the talent, I think we can, you know, we'll be there.
So make sure you tune in tonight at 7 o'clock. The 3 of us, Ethan Estrada, Paul Gunnis, and myself, will be on the call for that one. That's about an hour and a half, you guys. I'm excited. 7 o'clock tonight, Penguins take on Hawaii Hilo. And then a big day on Penguin Radio on Saturday. It's senior day at Kennelly Field. And we will have the men's soccer game at noon against Fresno Pacific, and then the women's game at 2:30, and then that night again more volleyball as we welcome in Holy Names. So you guys, we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll move right into professional sports right here on Penguin Radio. You're listening to Hot in the Igloo live at 5 p.m. at radio.dominican.edu. It's my favorite vice. I see you, I get enticed. Tonight I'm hit it twice. Coming home on that Bay Bridge. 2 a.m. them city nights. Go around and know them all, man. Yeah. Go around and know them all. Oh, baby, we gon' know them all, man. Oh, hope I know them all. Let's go. Don't throw it back. I got racks on. You ain't even got a ass. Y'all the cash on. The way you drop and shake it fast. See that? Take it back, we got cash on, man.
whatever's happening here, just knock it off.
You're listening to Penguin Radio.
Spirit on the water, darkness on the face of the deep. I keep thinking about you, baby, and I can't hardly sleep. I'm traveling by land, traveling through the dawn of the day.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Hot in the Igloo live at 5 p.m. on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. Well, we didn't come to lose. And right now, I'm going to kick it over to Paul Gunnis, and he's going to bring us up to date with a little bit of NBA. Paul?
Guys, how good were the Warriors yesterday?
Very, I assume.
I mean, 144 points? Are you kidding me? 144 points. They had 100 going into the fourth quarter. I mean, this was unbelievable. Steph Curry went off. I think he had, what did he have, 41?
I don't know. He had 51 and three quarters. I know that.
Yeah, 51. That's what it was. 51 and three quarters. It was incredible to watch just how explosive this Warriors team is. This is the first time all season we've really seen them amp it up. And I think it was because Washington has been playing well. And they had that disappointing loss against Denver where they had the block shot with, what was it, like 2 or 3 seconds left in the game. And then it sort of woke them up. They played great against Phoenix. They played, which, I mean, I can play great against Phoenix, but they played awesome last night against a team that I think is going to finish, you know, top three in the East. Not, that's not saying much, but Washington, they're pretty good. Yeah, and I think that... just watching the Warriors just run over that team last night was incredible.
You think about it, Steph Curry had, what, 11 three-pointers? And he dropped 51 points, and you have Kevin Durant, who wasn't even really talked about in that game. He dropped 30 points. He only had 1 3. So 27 of Durant's 30 points came from inside the arc. That's pretty good. I mean, a lot of the times you see, you talk about the Splash Brothers, right? Curry and Thompson, and then all of a sudden Durant hits 7 threes or something, and you know, you think the Warriors scored 144 points. Well, if Curry had 50, that means KD probably had 50, right? It just wasn't the case. But I mean, you said it, Paul. I mean, how good is this team, and how good are they going to be when they get Boogie Cousins? I mean, think about it.
To be honest, my thing with Boogie Cousins, though, on this roster is, where is he really going to fit in? He's going to be a role player. He's going to start at the five, but they don't need him. So I think he's going to be... I think
he can play
with
three players.
Well, here's the thing. I think he'll be disappointed in his production. I think he'll be disappointed in his role on the team. I don't think he's going to be putting up 20, 25 a night. I think it's going to be, you know, we need you to rebound, which is something he struggled with his whole career, just focusing on being a rebound role. We saw it more in New Orleans last year than we have is in his entire career. He's always wanted to be the star of the show. So it was very surprising for me to see Boogie Cousins say, I'm going to go to the Warriors. Now that he did, it'll be interesting to see if he's going to mature, and take that role of, hey, we need you to rack in the rebounds. You'll get your looks, but be happy with, you know, 10 to 15 points a night and racking in, you know, double-doubles for days. Just keep racking in those rebounds. Or if he's going to get disappointed and be, upset in his decision to go play for a team where he's not going to be a top 2-3 player on the team. He's going to be the 4, the 5. We don't know how good he's going to be after the injury either. So I don't know about the decision if it was me.
Well, you mentioned him being in New Orleans with the Pelicans. And speaking of the Pelicans, Ethan, you've been a Pels fan for a week now. How you feel about your decision?
Oh, I feel great. My Pels are 3-0, have scored over 110 points in all of their three games. Their second game of the season, played my home region, Sacramento Kings, and beat them 149-129. Nikola Mirotic with 36 points. Tuesday, Anthony Davis with 36 points and a 116-109 victory over the Clippers.
Can we just talk about how funny? I want to talk about the games that are tonight.
Okay.
But the first team I want to talk about is Cleveland. How funny is it that before the season they were talking about, oh, we're still going to be a playoff team, which they might be. I mean, I don't think you have to win a game in the East to make the playoffs, but they're 0-4 on the year. They're losing right now to Detroit, I think they're playing or something. They were 15-point underdogs against Detroit tonight. This Cleveland team, it shows how big of an impact LeBron can make on a basketball team. Because LeBron's the only piece they lost. And now they can't win a game. So,
I mean, is it bad when you go from LeBron James as your best player to Larry Nance as your best player? And Larry Nance isn't even starting?
No, I don't think Larry Nance is their best. I think Kevin Love, obviously, is their best player. But
George Hill's up there, too.
Those guys are okay. But that here's what it shows
Tristan Thompson, though, I mean, come on. That guy is going to be an all-star in the East now. I mean, come on. There's no LeBron. You got to take somebody from Cleveland for the all-star game, right?
All right. So here's my thing, too, that I want to talk about. I say that because if you look at the Lakers, last night the Lakers played awesome basketball. It was against Phoenix, but the Lakers needed to just come out and dominate and a win. And, you know, Phoenix, everybody says Phoenix is awful, which they are, but they have a lot of young talent. I mean, I think they're going to be good in 2 or 3 years.
Devin Booker dropped 71 points in a game or something.
Yeah, Booker's great. Ayton's good. I think that they'll be good in a couple years. But going back to this Lakers team, I think that's the potential you see. When the Lakers show up on defense, that's how they need to create points. They're not going to be the Warriors. They're not going to come out, score 180 points because they shot threes. They're going to create their opportunities off defensive opportunities. And we've seen them give up a ton of points in their first three games going into that game last night and lose close ones. I mean, they lost against Houston. Rajon Rondo knocked out Chris Paul.
yeah, that's right. Because apparently Chris Paul's the worst teammate on the planet Earth than ever in the NBA.
Well,
that's what the claims are.
Here's the thing. Going to that game, you know, I mean, I don't want to get into what kind of player Chris Paul is.
Okay.
I think Chris Paul is a good player. I don't know. I've never played with him. I don't know what kind of teammate he is.
You don't know how he is at home?
Yeah, you know, I mean, my experience from the Lakers, roster. No, I'm kidding. I never played with him. I don't know. Anyways, I just think that going back to talking about the Lakers a little bit, that game, people don't know this, with 54 seconds left, they were losing 109-108, I believe, and then they ended up losing 118 or something like that to 110. So I think that this Lakers team has a lot of things going for them now. So now they take on Denver tonight, who's 4-0, beat the Warriors. Denver, everybody was saying, who's going to be better this year, the Lakers or Denver? Who's going to finish higher in the West? And what's that guy's name? Jalen something? Jalen, you know what I'm talking about? He went to Michigan. He's like the analyst for... Anyways, so a lot of really renowned ESPN broadcasters were saying, watch out, you know. Denver's going to finish above the Lakers this year in the West.
Well, they're the only team to beat the Warriors in like the last 3 years, right?
I don't know about that, but Denver always has had the Warriors number. I think Denver plays well against the Warriors for some reason. I think last
everybody
year
has
well.
Their own kryptonite, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, I just think that, you know, heading into that game tonight, the Lakers they need to show up like they did last night. But I think that if you're a Lakers fan and you're listening in the Bay Area for some reason, I don't know why you'd be a Lakers fan up here, unless you're me, be excited. Because even though they fell 1-3 right now, LeBron took a team that's 0-4 in the East, 0-4 in the East, to the NBA Finals last year. So if that talent level that's 0-4 in the East can make it to the NBA Finals, I think that this team is going to be a playoff team and they're going to be a force to be reckoned with late in the season. Now moving on to the other game that's right now, going on right now, which is the Celtics versus the Thunder. Thunder out to an early lead in this first quarter, guys. And I was going to predict it before I was hoping to get to the segment before the game started, but it just tipped off. I think the Thunder are going to win their first game of the year tonight against the best team in the East, the Boston Celtics. They're 2-2 on the year, but everybody knows that at the end of the year, the Celtics are going to be the best team in the East. And I just see the Thunder winning this game tonight. It's at home. Russell Westbrook is now going to be finally back in the rhythm of things. We saw him miss the first couple games of the year. I think that I just see the Thunder winning the game tonight. I think that there's not going to be a high-scoring game. But for some reason, I just feel like the Thunder, overall, they're a sixth or seventh ranked team in the going into the preseason rankings in the West, 6-7 ranked team. That equivalents to top three, top two in the West, in my opinion. I just think that if you are a team in the West and you have to play that type of competition constantly and then you face a team in the East, it's like playing against a college basketball team. It's so much the talent level, not taking anything away from Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving and, you know, Jaylen Brown. That whole Celtics team is really, you know, good group of guys, good team. But they're used to playing such a tough schedule. I mean, Houston is what, 1-4 this year?
Yeah.
Oklahoma City's 0-3. The West is so good. I mean, just so good. Even Sacramento gives you a run for your money on every given night. So the bottom line is I just see the Thunder winning tonight.
I think it's a different story if they're playing in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like you said, you said it perfectly. Boston's the only good team in the East, in my opinion. You can name good players in the East, you know, but I just don't think there's any team that's going to contest with Boston. And when you're talking about Oklahoma City, I mean, you hit the nail right on the head. Oklahoma City's not going to blow you away, I mean, with their record because of the tough teams, because they have to play the Denvers and the Houstons and the LAs and the Golden States of the West, and Boston just doesn't have to deal with that. And I mean, if you, like you said, if you put Oklahoma City in the East, they're a top three team.
Yeah, no,
they are. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think, I don't think that anybody coming into this thought, you know, Boston's going to blow them out 130-97. I think you're right. It's going to be a close game. And if any team gets over 100 points tonight, I think it will be Boston. But I think if Oklahoma City wins this game, it's going to be under 100 for both sides.
Yeah.
It'll be like 98-94 or something like that.
I think I'm calling more like a 106-100 game personally, but that's just my own predictions. Going back to your comment about Boston being the only good team in the East. Yeah, I mean, other than Toronto, who's 5-0 on the year and has Kawhi Leonard now, Toronto added, they took away DeMar DeRozan and they added a better player in Kawhi Leonard. I just think, and Toronto competed with Cleveland when they had LeBron. Toronto competed with Boston last year.
The longevity, though, how long will that last? That's the only thing. I think Boston has a little more depth
definitely
sustain the success.
No, I think that this year, though, we're talking about right now, I think Toronto will have a good year. Kawhi's gone after this year. I don't care if they, because there's no way they're winning the championship. There's no way they're getting to the finals. Boston's still better than Toronto, but after Boston, Toronto, there's a major drop off. The third best team in the East, in my opinion, is Washington, and they lost by 22 or 30 or something like that to the Warriors last night. So, and Steph didn't even play the fourth quarter. So I just think that the East, obviously, the level of basketball being played in the East is just inadequate. And Boston's struggled so far. They have two losses in the East. You know, I just don't think that Oklahoma City loses tonight. That's just my opinion. All right, so you guys want to move on to a little bit of NFL? We got an NFL game going on right now.
We got NFL. We got it going on right now. Thursday night football is going on right now. You got Houston and Miami. And Ethan's over there pulling for Miami for whatever reason.
It's because I am a diehard Indianapolis Colts fan. I have been for quite a while. And if the Indianapolis Colts win on Sunday against the Oakland Raiders, and if the Miami Dolphins beat the Houston Texans tonight, the Indianapolis Colts only be one game out of the AFC South, which is terrible for the division that was arguably the best division in football last year with how competitive it was from top to bottom. But this year, it is not looking good. The Jacksonville Jaguars with a huge drop-off, back-to-back drudgings by the Dallas Cowboys and the Houston Texans. Jacksonville, who took the Patriots to the wire and almost went to the Super Bowl against the Philadelphia Eagles, definitely not looking like the same team. And that's because Blake Bortles is the worst quarterback in the last 10 years of the NFL. I will stick by that. I don't care what anybody says.
Who did Buffalo start last week?
He got benched for Cody Kessler against the Houston Texans. Blake Bortles is the worst quarterback to step foot on a football field in the NFL.
And Matt Leinart's pretty bad too.
3 to 5 years. I am very passionate about that for good reason, because he sucks against everybody else but the Colts, and it just makes me mad.
I'm going to bold prediction and say the Colts are one out because they're going to beat the Raiders. I think that's a you know, ballsy prediction that the Colts are going to beat the Raiders, if you will. Yeah, I mean, come on. The Raiders don't have Amari Cooper anymore. Can we talk about that, please?
They're trying to get rid of Derek Carr, apparently. That's the report.
I heard John Gruden say that they were not going to trade Derek Carr.
Yeah, that's a lie.
But they've already got rid of the other two best players on the team.
If I'm Jacksonville, I'm offering 3 first-rounders for Derek Carr. You put Derek Carr on Jacksonville right now, that's a Super Bowl team. I mean, with that defense.
Do you consider Derek Carr an elite quarterback?
I don't consider him an elite quarterback, but he's definitely a major step up from the worst quarterback in the NFL.
I think he's above average. I don't think he's elite.
Here's the thing. We saw him, what was it, 2 seasons ago when the Raiders made that playoff run?
And
he broke his leg.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
He hasn't been the same since.
Wait, here's my thing. That year, he had the best, top 2 or 3 offensive line in the NFL. You give Derek Carr a decent offensive line. Now, since then, they've been in the bottom 3.
Yeah, their line's banged up.
Yes, because their line's been banged up, old. They signed all these veteran offensive linemen that were really good and probably in their last year of their primes that year. And then since then, they've been hurt and just have stunk. The guys that they've replaced them with have just been awful. So that's a shame, because now Marshawn Lynch gets hurt because of it. Derek Carr, I think, is just scared when he's in the pocket. You can just see it in his face. When he's standing up there in the pocket, he's surveying the field, and he's like, where am I going to get hit? And he's trying to make these quick decisions. So erratic in his process. So when you say, is he an elite quarterback? If you put him on a team that has an offensive line where he feels safe when he's in the pocket, he drops back, and he feels like, I'm not going to get murdered in the next 2 seconds. He is an elite quarterback. He makes the throws when he needs to make the throws when he has protection. And that's more than can be said for Blake Bortles or Cody Kessler or Nate Peterman, who is the worst quarterback in the NFL.
Thank you, Nate Peterman.
No, Derek Anderson started for the Buffalo Bills.
I still think Nate Peterman's worse.
Yeah, here's the thing.
I'm going to win this game, coach. What, throws 2 picks in the final 4 minutes?
5 in 1 game.
Yeah, no, here's the thing about Nate Peterman, too. On Wikipedia.
Okay, we're starting quarterback.
Let me read you.
Oh, Wikipedia. Wikipedia's gotten a little more reliable over the last few years.
Yeah, okay. So they changed it, but it used to say Nate Michael Peterman is an American interception machine for the Buffalo Bills. And so is Blake Bortles the worst quarterback in the NFL? No.
He's the worst starting quarterback in the NFL.
Nate Peterman was a starter.
That's true.
Okay. He was a starter for a game because they didn't want to play
starting quarterback.
Tyrod Taylor, who is much better than either of those two.
So anyways, going back to my original point, if you put Derek Carr, which I think they should do, the Raiders suck. They suck. They have no Marshawn Lynch.
They're going to put $1 billion stadium and they're going to send it. This all happened when they were good. Oh, we're going to move to Vegas and we're going to – what are they going to do? They're not going to fill a $50,000 stadium with a team that's going to go 4-8?
No,
here's the thing. 4-12?
Las Vegas, they're going to fill the stadium. We see it with the Golden Knights.
They're good. They went to the Stanley Cup.
If you give casinos tickets, they're gonna give their hotel guests tickets to the games. You're gonna see it. I don't care what you guys say. I don't care if they're 0-24 in the next 2 years. They will have fans in the seats, and I think Gruden has a plan. I think they're gonna be good in the next couple of years. Gruden likes grooming his own pedigree of player.
Khalil Mack and Amari Cooper weren't part of that
plan. Here's the thing. Gruden said, look, I don't want to, you don't have more power than I do. And he was sending a message to Khalil Mack. And that's why he traded him. it was the worst decision in Oakland Raiders history. But he was
sending
a message.
Did he get rid of Reggie McKenzie too?
He was sending his message of, hey, look, I'm the boss. I'm the coach. If you don't want to follow my program, you can leave. I don't care if you're the best player in the world. He would tell Tom Brady the same thing.
Yeah, I'm just saying Khalil Mack has more sacks than the Raiders as a team, though.
Here's my thing, too. If you put
probably
Khalil
more turnovers,
Mack,
too.
If Bill Belichick was the coach of the Oakland Raiders in the same situation, he would have said, get rid of him. The same way Gruden said, get rid of him. And that goes back to a coaching mindset of, look, I'm a winner. If you don't want to help the team win, bye. And that's exactly what he did. He traded for draft pick. He traded Amari Cooper for draft pick because once he got rid of Khalil Mack, the season was going down the toilet. So now he's just finding a way to make this Raiders team good in the next 2 to 3 years.
I'm 50-50 on your comparison to Bill Belichick because I agree with what you're saying, with how John Gruden wants to build this team from the ground up, say, hey, what he's got 10 years to do it, right? And hopefully they don't fire him before then. But Bill Belichick, we saw it when Tom Brady was suspended, when he was hurt, when he was this, that. Bill Belichick is such a good – I think this is what you're getting at, is John Gruden is can be such a good coach like a Bill Belichick to where he doesn't even need Tom Brady to win games, okay? Tom Brady's hurt, Tom Brady's suspended, whatever it is, and he's able to mold his scheme – mold his game plan. We were talking about this with Ethan last night around what he has, and he's still able to win. I think that's what you're getting at. Tell me if I'm wrong, but no. I think that's what you're getting at, where he wants players built around him to where it doesn't matter what he puts on the field, but the product's going to be the same, and that's winning.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that he is going to try to get guys in there that buy into his process, that buy into his regime, his program that he wants. And I don't think Amari Cooper was buying into it, so he got rid of him. I don't think Khalil Mack. Well, I think the Khalil Mack situation was, look, you don't even want to be here. I don't want you here.
I think it's a tougher situation with Khalil Mack because of the position he plays.
Yeah, definitely. No, I just think that I 100% agree with you in that respect, just because Khalil Mack is such an impact player.
Yeah.
There's only one Khalil Mack in the next 15 years. It's like Brian Urlacher. You don't get rid of Brian
Urlacher. Good wide receivers with the production of Amari Cooper come out of the draft every year. I mean, Amari Cooper, which one are you going to get? The Raiders?
15 drops last year. That's some ridiculous
number. Led the league, right?
Yeah, led the league. Last two or three years.
If you're Dallas, you're going, am I going to get Raiders Amari Cooper? Or am I going to get Alabama Amari Cooper? Because I want Bama Amari Cooper because he sucked with Oakland.
Well, here's an interesting stat for you. In all even years, Amari Cooper has been productive.
Maybe they should send him to the Giants, and they're an even year team. I'm talking baseball Giants.
Okay, a couple of things. First off, John Gruden had too much power going into the situation with Oakland in order to mold it into what he wants. I don't think a coach taking over a new team should have that much power. That's a relationship that you have with your general manager, and you find a happy medium. And getting rid of Khalil Mack is different from what Bill Belichick does in New England, because even when Bill Belichick took over the Patriots, they were still a winning team. The Raiders are not a good team. You still need building blocks around it. Even if you need to pay an outside linebacker who is the captain of your defense, who is the anchor of your defense, you do whatever you can to keep him, because not only does it make him happy and make him more productive, but it also elevates the play from everybody else, because now offenses are scheming for that guy, so that guy would be able to come over and have an incredible game. And with the Amari Cooper situation, I actually like what Oakland did there. They needed to get him out. He needed a change of scenery. And also, good on them for getting a first-round pick for a guy who led the league in drops. That's incredible. But another thing, in the Dallas Cowboys, I think he fits so much better in that offensive scheme because the Cowboys like short plays. They're short to medium range. They don't go down the field. So I think Amari Cooper would fit well with Dak Prescott and Zeke Elliott in the Dallas offense.
Two things. First thing is Miami's winning 7-0.
Yes!
Second thing is I think – The main reason behind not only with just trying to send a message of the power was he's not trying to blow half the cap on a defensive player, a defensive lineman. I think his strategy, and this is just my guess with John Gruden and just the way he thinks, is I'm going to invest 90% of my payroll in offensive linemen. I think this offseason he's going to go out there, he's going to get every offensive lineman that he can that's an elite level offensive lineman. And then it doesn't really matter who you have other than that. If your offensive line and your defensive line are good, solid, you're going to be a good team. It just that's the way the NFL works. If you control the line of scrimmage, you're going to win games. So I think that if they get if they invest in offensive line, they draft good defensive linemen, as I think that's the plan, is get in the with the draft and free agency this next year, get good offensive and defensive linemen, then it doesn't really matter. You're going to you'll find guys that can make plays when they're protected. That's just that's my
okay. One last thing: the Indianapolis Colts lead the league in run defense on the defensive line and linebackers. They're top 10 in sacks, and they have not allowed a lot of sacks on the offensive line. And yet, we're 2-5.
That's defensive line. I'm talking offensive.
No,
line.
Both sides. Both sides. We're one of the best in the league, and we're still 2-5.
I got a question
that's
for
a
you guys
problem.
Before we go, since we have to leave for Conlin in 1 minute. I'd like to remind all of you listening to tune back in at 7 o'clock as we'll be on the air for the volleyball game. One last final question before we go, and I don't want an explanation. I mean, you could give a short explanation, but I know what Paul's going to go with this. And don't go there. If they play their starters every week, are the Rams going to lose a game?
No.
Absolutely not.
You think they're going to be the first undefeated team since?
I think
what
they're going to lose
Miami
one.
Miami Dolphins in 1973?
Yeah, 1972 Super 72? Bowl champions. I think the Rams will lose one game, and I think it's going to be a really close one.
To who?
That Packers game feels like a trap to me because Aaron Rodgers is such
Packers
a dynamic.
Packers suck, dude. The Packers are awful.
But you
the Packers almost lost to the Niners. I don't want to hear it.
But
I don't want to hear it. No, you lost all my respect for that comment.
It's all about Aaron Rodgers who, no
dude,
matter
Aaron
what
Rodgers
team he's
doesn't have any protection. He doesn't have any weapons around him. He sucks. And then he has Davante Adams. That's good. He has no defense. They let the Niners score 40 points almost against Ethan, please don't tell me that the Packers are good after letting the Niners
I'm not
beat them for three quarters in 14 minutes.
I'm not saying they're
game.
Good, but the Rams defense has not looked good the last couple of weeks. The Packers defense hasn't looked good the last couple of weeks. So when it comes down to a shootout, you got to count in that Aaron Rodgers is still one of the best quarterbacks in
Wait
the league,
second.
And it could be dangerous.
Wait a second.
You got 20 seconds. All
right, I got 20
the
seconds.
The Rams played
right,
the Niners, seconds. And the Niners are absolute trash.
Here we go. The Rams defense. You said they didn't look good this last week,
no,
right?
No, the 2 weeks before against Minnesota and Seattle, they looked awful.
Okay. So the Rams defense against, who was it you said? Seattle. Let me just read you some stats really quick. It was Denver or a Seattle game. So that was 3 weeks ago. Seattle was 3 weeks ago. Or
okay,
Denver.
Then Seattle. Their defense has not looked the same as it did last year. It's not as dominant.
Okay. Okay, I'd agree with that. Actually, okay, let's see here. Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think that the Jared Goff threw two interceptions in that game against Seattle, so that probably didn't help. But, I mean, I just think that the Rams overall as a team, best team in the NFL, best team since the Patriots of that lost to the Giants in the
So technically the Giants were the best team that year.
Okay. Anyways, the Niners, any team that I don't think the Packers, if there's a trap game on this schedule,
I think it's New Orleans.
That's
oh,
a good
dang.
Thing.
Yeah, I forgot that they played New Orleans. Yeah, New Orleans is the trap game. Never mind. I completely forgot that they played this
at New Orleans.
Yeah.
And then at home against Kansas City.
Yeah, and it's at New Orleans?
Yes.
No, yeah, that's the game they lose this season.
I think if they lose a game, it's either at New Orleans or at home against Kansas City.
All right, well,
Kansas City is good.
Is good. You know who else is good? Hawaii Hilo, and we got to go play them in 58 minutes, you guys. Make sure you tune back into Penguin Radio at 7 o'clock. The three of us will be on the air for the volleyball match against Hawaii Hilo. You've been listening to Hot in the Igloo, live at 5 on Penguin Radio.